most of us have two ideas about robots. One, realistic. Automatons that are programmed to perform a series of actions to work in environments that are unsafe for humans, maybe. And then there's the other image, the one we get from stories and movies like iRobot or The Terminator. In fiction, robots are sentient beings, all but human, like C-3PO or The Terminator. Not the evil one in the first movie, but the cuddly, sweet, protective one from Terminator 2.
Cuddly Terminators?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't recall.
Or Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2. Arguably, cuddly. You know, he got hugged. He was hugged.
Hasta
in the
la
movie.
Vista.
My next guest, Amy Harmon, is the national correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, and she says we need to forget what we think we know about robots and artificial intelligence. Welcome back, Amy.
Thank you.
First, an interesting thing in your article is the purpose for the new artificial intelligence. They're trying to make robots more human, right? More sentient.
More human, yes. I mean, you know, so that even if we can't make them smarter, we can make them more emotional, or we can make them at least make us feel emotion. I mean, that was what was sort of remarkable about one of the robots that I looked at, this robot called Taro, which is short for personal robot. It's this idea of a robot being more personal, more intimate. But this robot... It looks like a baby seal, and it is a baby harp seal, and it doesn't do that much. You know, it doesn't talk to you or sort of solve your problems or, you know, do hard equations for you or, as you say, you know, go places where humans can't go. It just sort of sits in your lap. It's used in some nursing homes now, and it sits in the lap of these elderly people. A lot of people, infused with people with dementia, and it just kind of purrs, and it purrs when it's petted.
But it responds to them.
It
responds to their voice. It responds to their specific ways of touching the robot. Is there any thought that the dementia patients or the patients that who are using Pero are think that Pero is real?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I think that some of the staff members that I spoke to at nursing homes do think that people think it is real. Although it is also used with people who clear. I mean, I interviewed people who, you know, said, "I know this isn't real. I know it's not real." But they, one man said to me, "But it brings out natural feelings," and that's sort of the paradox of it. I mean, it is this machine, but by responding, it's like, because it's sort of, we are wired to respond to things, even if we know that it's a machine, to just respond to something that responds to us, and that's what this is doing. So I went into these nursing homes thinking, well, this sounds pretty creepy. You know, why would you want to have a machine do this for people? But it, you know, I saw people light up, you know, who were otherwise just sort of staring into space when this thing was put in their laps.
I also found it interesting your description of your conversation. I mean, I guess I'm safe in calling it a conversation with Bina 48.
Yes.
Who's a head and shoulders.
She is a head and shoulders that can talk. She looks remarkably. Bina 48 is a robot that is modeled after actually a real person. So she looks a lot like Bina Rothblatt, who is the person that she's modeled after. She was purchased by the spouse of Bina Rothblatt, Martine Rothblatt. I had looked at all these robots. I looked at Paro. There are other robots that take sort of simplistic or strange forms. There's one that's like sort of a bouncing snowman. There are robots that, you know, that are sort of our stereotypical ideas of a robot, like more metallic or, you know, sort of,
Bina, did you, I mean, you went in thinking you were going to have an interview with a robot. Did you have a conversation, an actual responsive conversation?
I mean, Bina, yeah, I had this kind of lofty idea. I had this idea that I would sort of, you know, okay, I was going to go talk to a robot. It was going to be this kind of great journalistic coup. I would land an interview with a robot, and we were going to, there is a video of it, so you can see how it went on the Times' website. But, you know, so I was going to sort of do it on camera, and everybody would, and, you know, it was a rather pretty much of a lockdown.
Yeah. Yes. She didn't respond like a human, but I found it interesting that you still had, you responded to her in some ways like a human. You, like, wanted to excuse yourself from the room as you were leaving. You referred to her as a her.
Yes, that was what was sort of remarkable about it, because it was obviously so flawed. I mean, you know, I would ask her questions and she wouldn't respond to them, or she would go off on long tangents and I couldn't interrupt, and she was sort of jerking her head spasmodically from side to side. But, you know, but yes, but even so, even when I was sort of sitting in front of this very flawed machine, the little bit that she did respond to me was somewhat thrilling. I mean, she has this face recognition ability. So I had sent pictures of myself before I went. She is in Bristol, Vermont, living in sort of a nonprofit foundation there. And so, And at some point during the interview, you know, I was hoping she was going to recognize me, and she didn't at first. But at some point, whether it might have been just like the brightening of the light in the room made it possible for the cameras behind her eyes to actually see me, but she said, "Amy." And I looked at her and I was like, "Oh, she knows me."
Well, as long as you're not drafting emails to the robot, to Amy, we're not worried. But clearly you think this has therapeutic value. Did you see the movie WALL-E?
Yes, I did.
Did you get weepy there at the end? Well, so what's the next step for robots being autonomous sort of emotional companions, do you think, scientifically?
Well, so, you know, it's it's only going to get, the technology is getting better. You know, one of the pieces of technology I wrote about in the story is not actually in the form of a robot, but it's really interesting because it is a wearable sensor. So it is able to, or they hope it will be able to, I don't want to hype it too much, it's in a testing phase, but they hope that it will be able to sense the pulse, but by sensing the pulse, it's for recovering addicts. And so by sort of picking up all these physiological signals from the person wearing it, it will be able to tell when a recovering addict is having a craving, send a message to that addict's cell phone, and the phone will have these pre-programmed messages, or spontaneous messages, saying, "Oh, don't," you know, sort of encouraging them not to give in to a craving, or they'll know when they're passing a certain corner.
And they've got robots designed to help you stay on your diet and sit in your kitchen and talk to you about your choices. Amy Harmon is a national correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. You can actually see video of Paro, that's the seal robot that comforts residents of a retirement community, at our website, takeaway.org. And we're asking you, what do you most want a robot for? If you could have a robot, friendship? Let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.